This is WCRFM. Inside Tracks with Pete Whitehouse. This is WCRFM.
Tim Jenks is my guest on Inside Tracks today. This is the programme where we take a journey through someone's life via their choice of music tracks. You're listening to WCRFM. We're on 101.8 FM. We are the station with more for Wolverhampton. Tim is a local blues musician. He's a committed Christian and a man whose knowledge of UK TV reception issues is second to none. He's the senior executive at the CAI. They are the Confederation of Aerial Industries. Initially, he trained as a teacher. Tim abandoned that career to pursue his passion for music. He toured extensively with a rock band, including 2 years on the road playing in colleges and schools across the USA. Then, following a brief return to teaching, Tim became self-employed. He went into aerial installation. And by the 1980s, he'd become an active member of the CAI, helping to raise the standards of that constantly changing television reception business. Since 1994, he's been a full-time member of staff there, and in recent years has been heard on local radio many times, providing advice on all matters relating to TV installation and reception. These days, Tim nears retirement, with a bit more time for his passion for music, perhaps. We'll find out. His first track, however, takes us back to August 1964. It's the Kinks' breakthrough hit, You Really Got Me.
Girl, you really got me going. You got me so I don't know what I'm doing. Yeah, you really got me now. You got me so I can't sleep at night.
Mid-60s at their best, that was You Really Got Me, of course, from the Kinks. Tim, welcome to WCR.
Good evening, Peter. It's been a long time.
It has, and we go back as friends from way back, but I want to not that far back to 64, well, nearly, perhaps, but what memories does that bring back to you?
That brings back not actually the Kinks at first. Mum bought me Needles and Pins by the Searchers and It's Over by Roy Orbison, which I was in awe of. But then I heard on the radio the Kinks doing that very song we just heard. And the key for it was I was fiddling about trying to make a guitar, and all I got was pieces of string across plywood.
Why were you trying to do that?
Why was I trying to do that? Because I'd heard what these guys were doing, like Elvis. Yeah. I'd heard Needles and Pins, and I'd heard the Kinks. And what I'd worked out with the Kinks was there's actually only a couple of notes in that song. Da-da-da-da-da, right?
Yeah.
So I figured if I got a piece of string across a broom handle and a bit of wood, I could make the same similar sound. Not in tune, but I could go plonk, 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 and something would come out that sounded like the Kinks. And that set me on the trail of what a guitar could do. And the song in itself was very raw compared to what boys like Roy Orbison were doing, which was just beautiful singing.
And now, where was all this taking place? I mean, I mentioned that we knew each other, so you are a Wolverhampton lad, aren't you?
Yeah, I was born on Merridale Road, right opposite where Enoch Powell had his constituency at headquarters, and then we moved to Rupert Street, just around the corner, which was where I was raised. So that was my sister, mum and dad. And all this was going on in the living room at 34 Rupert Street, and I was messing about in Dad's shed with bits of timber, trying to make a guitar so I could go bum, 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 bum like the Kinks.
And when did you start doing the guitar properly, as it were?
My mum, I was 11 then. By the time I was 14, I was driving her mad for a real guitar instead of making things in the shed. So she took me up to the Bandbox in Wolverhampton.
Remember it well.
And we spent £12.50 on an Echo Texan guitar, which was my first proper guitar. And the neighbours said to my mum, "What a waste of money. It will never last. He'll get fed up of that very quickly."
You are a lifetime later, and music is still...
I'm 64 next month, and we're still doing it more than ever.
I think so, because looking at your website, you're talking about teaching music now, aren't you?
I'm doing some tuition. I haven't really made a beeline for advertising it as a profession yet. But by very fact that I've got a website, people are calling me asking, "Do you do guitar lessons, Tim?" Or they're coming to the gigs and seeing what I do with the band. Yeah. And are saying, "I want to do that." Yeah. Well, OK, the rest is just happening.
Tim, take us to the next track, which is Cream. But it's a live version of their famous track, Crossroads, which, of course, is the kind of inevitable blues song, isn't it?
Well, it is. It is a blues song from the 30s. But the point about this is, I'd done the Beatles thing. I'd tried with the Beatles. I never actually bought Beatles records, but I thought those boys have got it going on. But then I went up to the Odeon to watch Farewell Cream. Cream were splitting up before they'd really got going. And I saw Eric Clapton, Jack Bruce and Ginger Baker playing Crossroads live. And I thought, what on earth? This is what I want to do. I want to do this. And the riff that Clapton put to an old Robert Johnson song, to me, was like a light bulb went on. And this was a revelation to me. Crossroads.
Down to the crossroads. across her, believe I'm sinking down.
The legendary Cream with the classic Crossroads. I think it's a Robert Johnson song from 1936 or something like that, isn't it?
It is, but what Eric and the boys did with that, I couldn't believe when I heard it. And the next track's kind of an epiphany moment for me. Well, what was coming up in this blues rock scene? I mean, it went from the blues, Cream did, into something else.
Because the next track is another one who's gone, isn't it? It's Rory Gallagher. Yeah. It's a band that he had then called Taste, isn't it?
Yeah, and a sixth form friend of mine, Mickey Ellis, unwittingly took me... We went to round his house after school. So we're on an album, you've got to listen to this album. I said, God, great, you know, we got Cream out the way and all the rest of it. And he put this album on, he said, just listen to this. And it was this track. And I said, whoa, what is that? And he said, it's a fella called Rory Gallagher. And it's a band called Taste from Ireland. And I couldn't believe it was just three blokes doing this. Although there's some overdubs on the track. But this was guitar sound I'd never heard before. So it's different to Eric Clapton. It was different to...
By this point, were you forming your own band?
I was playing guitar and I could play Edelweiss competently. And other stuff like that. On White Horses, Let Me Ride Away, and Are You Going to San Francisco with Flowers in Your Hair? I was strumming all the right chords. But Rory Gallagher, I never believed one day, I'll possess one of his guitars, which is another long story, but I would be so influenced by it, I'd be putting tracks by Taste and Rory Gallagher in my set list.
What's going on? Can you correct my vision? Help in my decision. What's going on? You know what I'm needing. You won't find me kneeling. Should I be standing on a chair? My hands are waving in the air. You know as well as I do now, I'm going to get to you somehow.
Rory Gallagher, what a voice.
What a voice, what a guitar sound. There's no other guitar sound on the planet like that. Even Brian May talks about how he went to see Rory, the Marquee Club. And I can do it because I've got some of the gear Rory
used. How did you go and buy some of his guitars?
Well, the Gallagher family decided to put on sale some of the tons of gear that's in a warehouse in London somewhere up for sale because it was just sitting there doing nothing for 35 years since... You know, his demise. And I saw an advert for his guitar collection. And I went down to New Road Vintage Guitars in Fulham and saw this cherry red Fender Telecaster hanging up.
And you just had to have it?
I had to have it, yeah. And it's a fabulous guitar. It just seems to invigorate you when you put it on, you know.
So if we come along to see you, will we see the guitar?
You will see the guitar, and people come along just to have a look and kiss the guitar for some reason, but, you know.
Now, Tim, let's take you back to the decision that we all have to make about what job you're going to do. You've done a lot of different things in your life, really, when you look back.
I've had a charmed existence, I have, Peter. I really have.
Teaching was one option, and you pursued that quite
a while. I pursued that because I was coming to a crossroads of my own in the sixth form at Pendiford High School, and I still didn't know what I really wanted to do. And one of the staff advised you'd be good at teaching because I was becoming a bit of a front man with a guitar and could stand up and stand my ground. So I went for teaching as an option. Yeah, that's a respected career. Mum thought it was great. Dad thought even, yeah, fabulous. But I really wanted to see if I could play a guitar at a professional level. That was my aim in life at the time, although I was realistic. The guys like Rory Gallagher had got it sewn up, you know, and I was just...
But, I mean, you pursued that pretty well, didn't you? Because
I pursued it.
Touring the USA and that...
Well, yeah, we're jumping on to the 70s now, when I heard bands like Thin Lizzy and Wishbone Ash, which we're going to hear, where they married up two guitars playing melodies together.
Two rhythm guitars?
Well, there's two lead guitars where they're working out harmonies above each other, and I thought, this is fantastic. And I was teamed up already with a friend of mine, Eddie Phillips, who I'd met in the gospel rock days that started me off at St Jude's Church, and we shared a passion for this twin guitar thing, so we sat down and started working out the licks that bands like Wishbone Ash were putting out on albums in the 70s.
Talking of Wishbone Ash, shall we take a listen now?
This is it.
King Will Come from Wishbone Ash. Tim Jenks is my guest on Inside Tracks today. Another favourite band of yours from the 70s, sadly no longer with us, of course. It's Thin Lizzy coming up next. The boys are back in town. I'm going to ask you about that in a second or two, but this leap from teaching to aerial installation, which is, became your main career, how did that come about?
Well, since I was a kid, when we used to build crystal sets out of diodes and a bit of wire all the way down the garden to the apple tree and back, we used to receive radio stations we could listen to under the bedclothes after Mum had sent us to bed. And I was playing with radios and antennas that would receive... I was breaking open transistor radios to see how they worked and attaching antennas to them to get Radio Luxembourg and things like that. So I had a natural affinity to antennas and how they worked.
And no fear of heights?
No, because I climbed out onto the dormer window of my bedroom to get more height on the antenna to receive
because
Radio Luxembourg.
We've lived through an enormous transition of time, haven't we, with aerials, frequencies. We've got, I can remember... when there were only two channels, for goodness sake, you know.
Yeah.
And now we've got this multiplicity of cable. We've got the satellite TV. Is that on the demise because of the rise of all this other? But in your lifetime, in your working time, you've seen all these changes.
Well, it's the fastest growing technology in the world. You cannot think of another technology that moves as fast as broadcasting. It's just phenomenal. And we're now working across... half a dozen platforms of how people listen to audio and look at moving pictures. Whereas, like you say, my career in aerial started because I invented an aerial for BBC Two when it was on UHF.
And so somebody fixing your aerial now is doing more than that, aren't they, very often?
They're crawling around on their hands and knees in your living room more than they are climbing up the roof ladder to fix the antenna. You can fix the aerial in 5 minutes. It's all the connecting up. The connectivity of all the kit we've got in the living room is a major part of the job now.
And the need for good professional standards, I would think, because you could get the wrong person and you mess everything up.
Well, there lies 24 years of my life. There was not much standard that was general knowledge in the public domain until they appointed me to try and get training in place as an education man for installers, and also start rewriting codes of practice that would become mandatory best practice for our members.
I mean, things we remember like Channel 5 come along, retuning for that. I mentioned satellite, cable, broadband. Presumably that's why you've gone to phone-ins at radio stations.
Well, that brought me into that. Once we embarked past Channel 5 and satellite into the digital switchover that was coming, that took me into the government setup where government was looking for clues on how to switch everybody in the nation to a digital platform as opposed to what they'd already got. Yeah. So the profile went very high for the Confederation, and I was fortunate enough to give evidence to Select Committee and other stuff down in Westminster that put us on the path to where we are now, aerial-wise.
We'll perhaps pick up that later on, but let's go back to the music with Thin Lizzy. Why have you picked The Boys Are Back in Town?
Well, just like you've heard Wishbone Ash, these were guys that were doing the twing guitar thing, which was another little revelation along the way for me musically. When I heard Wishbone Ash, I got together with an old mate of mine, Eddie Phillips, and we sat in the living rooms at home and worked out what these boys were doing and then put the Thin Lizzy-type guitar attack with Wishbone Ash melody into our songs and invent lead breaks that were better than the normal man making it up as he goes along, like we do in the blues. And we were playing harmony leads together, which we took to the USA with us on the first Aaron tour, which, of course, British music in the States in the 70s was... they seemed to worship the ground you walked on just because we were English.
And this is The Boys Are Back in Town.
To see the man, I still think them cats impressed. They were asking if you were around, how you was, where you could be found. Told them you make a living down.
chick that used to dance a lot. Every night she'd be on the floor shaking what you got. Man, when I tell you she was cool, she was a red hot. I mean, steamer. Now that time over at Johnny's place, well, this chick got up and she smacked Johnny's face. Man, we fell about the bliss. That chick don't wanna know. Forget her. The boys are back in town.
Lizzy and the boys are back in town. This is WCR and Inside Tracks. My guest today is Tim Jenks. Great to have you here, Tim. You played that pretty much every night when you were on the United States tour.
Two 9-month tours, and we put it together in rehearsal, and it stayed with us for the 2 9-month stretches we were on the road.
You still like it to this day?
Yeah. I still play it when a partner who knows it comes along. And yeah. If Eddie and I ever get together, we can't help but do it.
Now, Tim, your next one is Peter Green's Fleetwood Mac, distinctively not the later Fleetwood Mac.
No.
Stop messing around. Tell us about this one.
Well, Peter Green, we're going back in a bit of a circle here, because this was the guy that replaced Eric Clapton in John Mayall's Blues Breakers, which nobody at the time thought, you can't do that. You'll never replace Eric Clapton. But Peter Green did, and some reckon maybe a little bit better because of the feel this guy's got. And also, again, we're on guitar tone here. The sound out of this guitar is totally unique, and again, you can't copy it.
Won't you squeeze on me, baby? I tell my feet turn cherry red. You roll me so hard, baby, I'm falling out of bed.
Stop Messing Around from Peter Green's Fleetwood Mac. The next one we're going to hear, we're going to stay in the blues territory in a minute or two, is Gary Moore and Don't Believe a Word. But this is a really different version of it. Tim, what about the music you're doing now? Because it's every month, isn't it? The Star Inn in Wensfield?
Yeah, good friend of mine, David Sandu, took on a pub there, revamped it from being derelict. And one of the first guys, he said, well, I want to bring your room for the blues to the Star Inn, because I was looking for somewhere.
What was the concept of Room for the Blues? Because he'd been going down in Whitmarines for a while, hadn't
he? Yeah, it goes back a long while now. I wouldn't like care to think how many years. It was a conversation in a pub with another guitar player, and I said, we should get together and have a jam session. He said, well, why don't we book a room somewhere and invite folks along? And Room for the Blues was born out of just four guys gathering together and jamming, and a crowd turned up we never believed. And that was upstairs at the Clarendon Hotel in Chapel Ash at the time. And from there, we went to the Paget Arms, and a crowd started small there and got bigger and bigger. So Room for the Blues was based on guys just getting together and playing the blues, very much like you've heard Peter Green doing there. And that was live in the studio. You could hear him going whoopee in the background. And that's what we were doing. And the crowds got bigger and bigger because we also didn't know what we were doing next. By that, I mean the set list became a bit of a joke. And someone would say, can you play Black Magic Woman? Yeah, why not? And away we'd go. And someone would get up and join in with us. So Room for the Blues attracts a crowd on the spontaneity of it.
Interesting, Tim. Interesting concept, that is. So it's at the Star in Wensfield.
Graysley Lane, Wensfield.
Now, is this track we're going to play now, the Gary Moore one I mentioned, is that the kind of music you might hear?
It definitely is. And when you blend the Peter Greens, the Gary Moores and Eric Claptons all together, you get this commercial blues that people recognise. They don't know why, but they do. And also you get the foot-tapping, swinging kind of music that kind of crosses all, you know, from 65-year-olds to even teenagers learning the guitar.
Don't believe me if I tell you not a word. Tell you that I'm in love with you. Don't believe me if I tell you that I wrote this song for you. There just might be some other silly pretty girl.
Gary Moore and Don't Believe a Word. Wonderful blues song there. Now, we're going to move to your own music now, yeah. Tim. Your own music must, I would imagine, because it's about your feelings and about thoughts, it must reflect your Christian ideals. Is that right?
That's absolutely right. Christianity is a way of life. I don't look at it as religion. I attend church as regularly as I possibly can. I'm a follower. You can't call yourself a Wolves supporter if you don't go to the Molyneux. So if you're going to be a Christian, you go to church. And I've been brought up on church music. I was a choir boy. Then I learned to play guitar. And I started writing about the things I believed in. And a lot of rock musicians do that today. Wishbone Ash have done it. Cliff Richard's done it to great effect. Phil Collins has even sung about Jesus. I do occasionally, but what you're going to hear is probably a song that brings together all these genres I've brought into the show, I hope, tonight, from blues to ballady rock.
Because when you perform a song that you've written, this one we're going to hear, it's A Light That's Shining, isn't it?
Yeah.
What are you trying to talk about in this
song? Well, it starts off with a guy who's building the house that was built on the sand gets washed away. If you're going to build on the rock, you've got a firm foundation, which is what the Christian faith is all about. So the song basically says that. And when you finally realise it or get this Road to Damascus thing, if you do, I didn't, but I did see a light that's shining, and that's where I got the hook line for the song from.
I can read the writing, though it's not written on the wall. I understand the message, though I don't hear any call. I see a love that passes far beyond the kind, a sacrifice that goes past any I could find. I've always built my house on ground like shifting sand. The time has come for me to build on firmer land. I'm gonna find the rock I no one ever owned. I'm gonna sing the song that makes the broken whole. And I can see the light that's shining. Oh, let it shine.
That's Tim Jenks, of course, who is our guest on Inside Tracks this week, and light that's shining. Snowy White's next with Bird of Paradise. Not one known to me. Tell us about this one, too.
Well, Snowy is not known to a lot of people, but he was one of the Thin Lizzy guitarists towards the end of Thin Lizzy. And although he could do some steaming rock, he is one of the most melodic players you'll ever hear. A bit like Mick Taylor out of the Rolling Stones. Same kind of thing. Play wonderful melodic guitar and make it up as they go along as well, which is quite remarkable. So this is a ballad, which has got blues in it, but also tinges of guitar, which is totally unique, I think.
To keep your life with you.
Snowy White and Bird of Paradise. Tim Jenks has been my guest on Inside Tracks this week. He is a musician. He's passionate about it. And we're going to end up in a minute or two with Humble Pie. Of course, classic from them, Natural Born Boogie. But what are your plans now for the future? Because the future's changing, isn't it? You're going to retire from the aerial business fairly soon, I think.
I'm going to do more gigs. And I'm going to keep promoting this thing that music should be live. OK, you take some CDs home and you listen to Spotify or whatever it is you download. But when you come to my gigs, we play. We don't plug in our iPods or our tablets to sing along to. You can't bring your laptop.
It's the real thing.
It's the real deal. And I want to get kids into the real deal. I saw a young band the other night and they were playing. They weren't singing with their iPods like I have seen. Or programmed keyboards.
So if people are interested in coming along to see The Room for the Blues,
yeah,
how do they get in touch with
well,
you about
if
this?
They want to email me, tjenks, all one word, lowercase, tjenks@btconnect.com. I'll email them back and they can go on my list. Otherwise, they go timjenks.co.uk and I'll read all about it. And then I can put them on a list. If they want me to email them when we're on, they can come and join in. If they can play their instrument, they
or
can
if they just want to watch?
They want to watch the blues being played and a bit of boogie like Steve Marriott, who we're going to hear in a minute. This was probably the greatest British soul rock voice we ever produced in the UK. And Humble Pie could well be the greatest rock and roll band in the world.
And what a way to go out.
What a way to go. Natural Born Boogie. This is one I'll play till I die.